Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Michael Footer.
And I'm Amanda Farrow.
On each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. Except today...
It's an earnings call.
It's an earnings show!
About earnings calls.
Earnings.
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 This is what we did last time.
We did.
Because it was just too much.
It is.
So but we took a week off.
We did. We took a week off. We had a little staycation because pandemic.
Because we can't go and do the things that we actually want to do, like go travel to the West Coast and see our friends.
Yes, exactly. So today we'll be talking about Ubisoft's earnings, and specifically, I don't listen to earnings calls anymore because nobody's paying me to, and you need to pay me to listen to an earnings call.
That's fair.
Because
they're boring.
They are. Except I listen to the Ubisoft earnings call, so we'll be talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will be talking, we're actually going to lump in some news into this show, because we're going to be talking about Microsoft. They had their earnings. We could talk about how the Xbox team did and how gaming did. But then we'll talk about the Xbox Series X showcase and some of the trends and learnings that came out of that.
That sounds good.
So where are we starting?
Well, I feel like we should start off with Ubisoft, since that took up a chunk of a conversation for us last week when we were on staycation.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's dig into it then. Mike, what are we looking at?
So this was their Q1 2020-21. So this is the first quarter of their current fiscal year that began on April 1st and ended on June 30th. As you may be aware, we are living under a pandemic.
Are we really?
We are.
Isn't that how we launched our podcast?
It is, in fact, how we launched this very podcast. And as we've talked about in the past, gaming right now is seeing a benefit from the fact that people are stuck at home.
Yep.
And
which is what we were anticipating. It was in... My goodness, even from like our first episode, we were talking about this with Tinsley,
mm-hmm.
that we're not going to see any real degradation in the game industry except on the long tail.
Right. And we'll talk about that a little bit. And I think, you know, one of the things we talked about with Dave Oshry was that engagement was going to be very up and spend was going to be down. I think what we're seeing is that a combination of aggressive sales that have been happening since the beginning of the pandemic, there's giveaways, of course, which drive engagement because there's no barrier to entry.
Yeah, of course.
Other than owning the hardware.
Yeah, for sure.
Which, in fact, is a barrier to entry, although at this stage in a console generation especially,
it's less of one. It's less of one. It still is one, but it's less of one.
And because there have been aggressive sales over the past 4 or 5 months...
Have we seriously been in this for that long?
So not counting March, April, May, June, July, and we're heading into August. So like we're like 4.5 months at this point.
Oh, I need all the naps.
Yeah.
That's not okay.
So the important thing to note is that the entirety of this quarter was under quarantine.
Yes. That is something that's really important to note, because we are seeing, and like the last time that we had this conversation was what? March? Was it March? Was it
April?
Well,
no, because it would have been late April,
yeah.
Early May.
Yeah, it would have been late April. And the last time that we talked about Ubisoft's earnings, things were not looking so good.
No, it was a very, very rough quarter for them.
It was a soft quarter for them. Things are on the upswing.
Yes, this was a very, very strong first quarter for them, where they didn't really have any huge releases.
No, lots of sales, though.
Lots of sales,
trying to get people to stay indoors and try to capitalize on the engagement that they knew was going to be incoming.
Yep.
So what have we got? What are we looking at for numbers here, just on a base level?
So total sales were 427.3 million euro. That is a 17.6% increase year over.
So let's think about where they were last year. What did Ubisoft launch during Q1 last year? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't remember.
I don't even, I'm not sure even
we'd have
I
to
remember.
Go back. We'd have to go back.
I don't think they really launched anything significant.
I think if we look at this, when did Breakpoint come out? That was at the end of Q4 for them?
Yeah.
That was March?
Let me look it up real quick. So yep. Walk us through the rest of what's going on here, and I'll look up.
They had record net bookings.
They did.
Yep, so that is commitments.
And we've talked about this. We did this for a term sheet.
Yep.
My goodness. During our first... financial call.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll pop that into the show notes if you haven't had a chance to listen to our first financial breakdown
I'll to,
show.
I'll have to search and figure out which show that was. So net bookings were up 30.5% year over year to 410 million euro. Digital net bookings. Now this is a big one. And we're going to be talking about digital with regard to Ubisoft, which Ubisoft's mix is always largely digital.
It is. It has been.
Or
for
has
a
been
of years.
Has been significantly growing. I would say that they are on the leading edge of digital adoption. Their digital net bookings were 86.7% of total net, and they increased 21.5% year to 355.4 million euro. So again, that's 86.7% of their total net bookings were digital versus retail. Again, people weren't going out and they weren't buying retail copies.
Mm-hmm.
Their catalog net bookings, again, now I want to talk a little bit about catalog because when I was tweeting out very rapidly as I was listening to the call.
Also, just to...
We have an answer?
We have an answer. So Rainbow Six Siege continued to be really big, but the vast majority of what was going on with Ubisoft were releases and launches at Q4.
Mm-hmm. Previous so they were, so it was, a fairly empty quarter for them last year in Q1. So catalog, when we talk about catalog, we talk about non-current releases, so things that haven't come out in the current year. In this case, you know, this is Q1.
Yep.
So pretty much everything from Ubisoft is catalog at this point.
Because nothing significant has come out. Hyperscape is not out.
It's not, and it wasn't even in the, it was in July, so
exactly.
It wasn't even
that's
in the
true,
reported
that's true, that's
quarter.
True.
So the things to note here, and this tripped some people up when I was tweeting about catalog on Twitter. When we talk about a company's catalog, we're just talking about their legacy titles. That could be something that came out a year ago. It could be something that came out 5 years ago. And I talked about, and we'll bring this up as we go through the things that I noted in the call,
mm-hmm.
that Ubisoft wants to bring catalog games to Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5. Now, that doesn't mean they want to bring their entire back catalog.
No, it does not. It means that they want to be bringing some subset of their catalog to the new
sure.
consoles.
The lowest hanging fruit, the stuff that's easier to monetize. And quite frankly, with the Xbox Series X, they could turn around and they could monetize any of the games released during the Xbox One era. And because the Xbox Series X will play games all the way back to the OG Xbox, they could more easily monetize. If any of those games aren't available digitally, they could make the transition and make some of those games available digitally.
Right.
I don't know. Can you buy Assassin's Creed 1 on... You can buy it on PS3 and maybe Xbox. I mean...
I don't think that you can purchase it on Xbox One. I don't think that they remastered it. They remastered everything from the Ezio era because it was just... I mean, it's Ezio.
Yeah. I mean, but it came out on Xbox 360
it
first.
Did.
You'll be able to play that Xbox 360 version. I don't know if they're going to invest in those games other than to make sure that they play well. That's not necessarily a huge investment because of the Xbox Series X purportedly playing everything right out of the box without emulation.
It's true.
And working well.
So we'll have to, we'll keep an eye on that. But it is really important to note that talking about bringing catalog games forward does not mean the entirety of a back catalog. It just means that they're going back and they're taking a look at what would be the most successful or the most likely to be successful on the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5.
And again, it doesn't necessarily mean they're doing anything to those games because, again, the Xbox Series X plays all the way back and the PlayStation 5 is going to play PlayStation 4 games. It could just be, okay, yeah, these games do in fact work and therefore we can promote them a little. We can invest in promotion.
We can invest in marketing.
And we'll talk about why that might be powerful moving forward. But catalog net bookings were 97.1% of their total net bookings. And that's Ooh. Because, again, like nothing came out.
Well, yeah, but still. There's a lot of they've got some decent games back there.
Sure.
Seriously, if you haven't played Assassin's Creed Odyssey, give your head a shake and do it.
Yep. They are on track to reach their 2020-21 targets. They also had some of their own things that they called out in their press release.
Mm-hmm. So it according to Ubisoft, they had a record level of engagement during this quarter. Rainbow Six Siege, unsurprisingly, had a sharp increase of engagements, including a 30% increase in net bookings. Assassin's Creed is looking at 60% year-over-year increase in net bookings, which means, like, it's tied to those big sales again,
yeah.
Right? Because there were a lot of sales that it was like, do you have Assassin's Creed Origins? Do you have Assassin's Creed Odyssey? No? Here you go.
But even back, like, I had been like avoid, like I hadn't purchased AC Rogue on PC. And it's like, oh, I can get it for $5. Like there was the big, there was the Epic sale, which kept giving you the $10 coupon. Yeah. So like between all of that, I think now in Uplay, I have like every Assassin's Creed game that's available on PC.
Yeah.
Because I just kind of like, I said, yeah, I'll just complete my collection. That's fine.
Yeah, we'll just do the thing.
Here's a big one.
Oh my goodness. Okay. As a fan of this series, this delights me. This delights me in so many ways. So Just Dance. Yeah. The dancing game. Saw a 500% increase in net bookings year over year. I wonder why that is.
People needed to move their bodies under quarantine.
And check it out. Just Dance 2020 is legit amazing. Mm-hmm. It is so cool. And I have so much fun playing that game. And you can play with songs that go all the way back to like, my goodness, like 2015 or something like that. It's
I actually
so good.
Think their subscription program there was probably
smart.
Drove a bunch of that.
It's so, so smart too. We were just talking about Hyperscape. So Hyperscape had top billing on Twitch during its PC technical test launch, which is cool.
Which, yeah, and let's talk about that a little bit because that kind of bullet point can be deceptive. And I want to talk about Apex Legends for a second.
Yes, please.
And, you know, if you look at what happened with Apex Legends, where that game spiked really huge because they invested a huge amount of money in influencers streaming the game and drawing attention to it.
Initial influencer marketing,
And then it fell off a cliff and then started to rebuild, and now Apex has a solid community.
It does. And it's a good game.
And I think Hyperscape's the same. I think they invested in influencer marketing, and it worked for them.
I downloaded it.
Yeah.
I really want to play it.
Yeah.
It looks really interesting. I haven't been super interested in a new IP from Ubisoft in a while, but that one looks really interesting. So another one that they're talking about record engagement for is they had record engagement for Ubisoft Forward. Apparently, it's more than during E3 events, and there is another Ubisoft Forward that is planned for September.
Yep. It's, I mean, we spoke at length about our challenges with the Ubisoft Forward event. We talked about that with Kate Sanchez. We talked about that on the news show.
Yep.
So,
We're
not going to dig into it. So you can dig into our last two shows. It's episodes 32 and 33, where we talked about that a bit. So I listened to the call, and here were some of the takeaways as I was listening.
Mm-hmm.
Ubisoft directly pinned the success of this quarter on COVID and the fact that people were home. They did note that things are going to start returning to normal levels in Europe, but because the U.S. has handled things, they didn't say this. This is my comment.
Well, they wouldn't.
No, because the U.S. has screwed this up so royally. Chances are that quarantine levels of engagement and spend that they saw in the first few months are likely to continue. Maybe not in full in the United States, but at similar levels. Now, part of the issue is that. And this comes back to our conversation, where games are going to get hit, entertainment in general is going to get hit
on the
back
long tail.
Now, because of quarantine, now that you and I ran into this situation, we felt more comfortable buying movies on Vudu or Movies Anywhere. We spent a little bit more because, hey, we weren't going out to the movies as much because there's eight of us and we take the family out to the movie, or the four of us go out to the movie. And that's money we weren't spending.
Yep.
So we had that flexibility. But we're also lucky because we are financially stable right now. As this goes on, and as we start to see another spike, and we are anticipating another spike because, hey, let's be honest, the first spike hasn't even fully subsided yet.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to see that disposable income is going to be constricted, and entertainment products are going to
suffer as a result.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's important to note that, you know, gaming is a luxury hobby. It is. Mm-hmm. Any kind of gaming is a luxury hobby. We're not just talking about video games. We're talking about tabletop games. We're talking about, I mean, like, role-playing games are less of a luxury because they're a little bit easier to get into. But gaming is a luxury. And it's important that we note that we do have the privilege of being financially stable, but that many people, especially in the United States, are going to continue to suffer as a result mm-hmm. of external forces that they have no control over themselves.
Yep. There was an analyst question about Hyperscape and about the release cadence. Ubisoft isn't really talking about what its plans are for a content schedule yet.
Mm-hmm.
They dodged the question entirely, which was not an uncommon response on this call. There was a little bit of talk about next gen, as you might expect. Ubisoft has said it is not raising prices on games for, quote, the Christmas games.
So they're not doing this for holiday launches.
Which includes Assassin's Creed and Watch Dogs Legion. So those will be priced at 50.
In the United States.
In the United States, right. There's also no plan to increase pricing, quote, for the moment. Now, that leaves the door open for Ubisoft to see what happens with Take-Two.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this going to be like Sony's indefinitely conversation?
Yeah, I mean,
because how long did that last?
About 3 weeks. And we're talking about the indefinite delays of The Last of Us Part 2 and Iron Man, when Sony wasn't sure when it was going to be able to deliver retail copies of those games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so Watch Dogs Legion and Assassin's Creed will launch at whatever the normal retail price is for this generation in your territory.
Sure.
In the US, that's $59.99. In Canada, that is
$70. I think so. I want to say yes.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yes.
So as we've talked about previously, Take-Two, 2K Sports is raising the price of next-gen games, starting with NBA 2K21.
Which we had a very long discussion about, so if you want to go back and listen to that, we can always drop that in the show notes as well, because mm-hmm. we had a very long discussion about game pricing.
Absolutely. You know, from my perspective, I think Ubisoft is smarter. Ubisoft, who is typically on the cutting edge of every new technology and every new movement in games, has decided to sit this one back. And I think that's kind of telling. Like, they're letting Take-Two take the bullet for the industry on this one, because nobody else is committing to increase prices yet.
Nope. Because I don't know. Because especially right now, it feels insensitive.
It does.
It feels very anti-consumer. And it's insensitive to the fact that a lot of people are already struggling to make ends meet. And sometimes gaming is all people have to ensure that they're like, they even have a little slice of happiness.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ubisoft also, let's be honest here, has mastered the, we're going to sell three different versions of our game and the most expensive one's going to be $130.
It's true.
So the Platinum Edition or whatever the full Ultimate Edition is, it used to be the regular, the collectors, and then the gold edition was $99.99. Now mm-hmm. I think like the top edition is something like $119
I think so. But I think that comes with like a cool statue.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it ends up being on digital, but
it's fine. But yeah. Mike's right. So
Ubisoft is getting theirs another way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not that we're not gonna clap for that right now at all. So what else have we got? We got another comment about catalog games. So this is going back to what we were just talking about in terms of the catalog,
mm-hmm.
bringing the catalog forward, some pieces of the catalog forward. It is important to note that this doesn't mean that it's not necessarily going to be every game that they've ever released. It just means that they're probably going to be doing things like, oh, well, we'll bring Just Dance forward and we'll bring these kind of games forward. Like, you know, maybe.
Like, I would not be surprised if we see upgraded versions of the games that that monetize post-launch well. So a PS5/Xbox Series X update for Rainbow Six.
Sure.
A PS5 Xbox Series X update for Honor. For any other game that they're going to continue to monetize and want to put more
Odyssey content will on. Be in that.
Breakpoint.
Breakpoint will be in that because they'll continue to monetize and continue to change Breakpoint much in the same way they did with Wildlands mm-hmm. for another couple of years. Yeah.
So I think those are the games when we talk about catalog games getting some attention and some release on next gen consoles. I think that we're talking about potential free updates pretty much so that they can continue to monetize them.
That makes sense.
Yep.
So it looks like there was no specific mention of Uplay Plus.
What's
going on there?
There wasn't, but they were asked about it, and they said it benefited from the lockdown, and it'll be around for the long term. There's one thing that we missed in the notes. Watch Dogs Legion. This is we've talked often on this show about when we think consoles are coming out. Both of us have been pretty confident about November,
mm-hmm.
and Ubisoft made a comment that leads me to believe that we are on track here.
Oh yeah, I 100% skipped over this. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Watch Dogs Legion, which we know will be released on October 29th. No big surprise there. That's been announced. I think they announced it at Ubisoft Forward.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what they said. It's going to get a, quote, relaunch for next generation. Now,
so that could very well mean that they are going to follow in the same path as Cyberpunk 2077, in the sense that there will be another version of the game that's launched later.
Well, Sort. We know that Watch Dogs Legion is smart delivery, though.
Yeah, well, of course. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be that way right at launch.
Here's my interpretation of this. Okay. Because given that Ubisoft has... They're slightly bigger than CD Projekt Red when it comes to... I mean, just a little bit.
Yes, they have 10... Well over what? Like,
it was like...
18,000 employees or something like that. Yes, I understand that CD Projekt Red is not that big. Thank you.
So my guess, so if I had to guess here, you wouldn't, and they have in the past released multiple versions of a game across generations, Black Flag, for instance, at the start of last generation. Mm-hmm. If the new consoles were coming out in October, this wouldn't be a relaunch.
No, it would not.
It would be simultaneous, or it'll be available at launch for all of these systems. Right. I think, and December is a dead month for console releases. It's a terrible month to release consoles.
It is awful because you're after Black Friday at that point. And because in the American market, especially, Black Friday is such an important day for technology. Mm-hmm. I just ends up being a black hole.
So that leaves us with November. And not at the very beginning of November either, because that's not a relaunch. So we think...
Between week two and week three.
Week two and week three. And based on what happened last gen, we think that's going to be mirrored. And one of them will go... What did I say? It was like the week of the 10th?
Yeah.
Or the 9th. And the other one will go the week after.
Yeah, exactly. Now, so that no one's launching on the same, like, oh, you showed up in this dress. Oh, one of us is going to have to change.
Yeah. So somebody asked us on Twitter... Mm-hmm. Why does Black Friday matter if both of these consoles are likely to sell out anyway immediately? And I think this comes down to mindshare, and it comes down to the non-core audience.
Yes, absolutely. So like, if let's take a look at this from like our neighbors' perspectives, right? Because we're the gamers out of all the parents.
Yep.
Like if we look at our marching band parents and the folks that we talk to around marching band season, if they were looking to purchase a console of any kind, they're going to want to do it on sale. And they're going to want to do it as close to Black Friday as humanly possible.
Now, we know there ain't going to be no sales.
There are going to be zero sales because those consoles are going to sell out lickety-split.
Yeah.
There's almost no chance that they are going to have any overages at all beyond pre-orders.
But you want that buzz. You want those people clamoring for the console. You want that. You don't want people to forget that they're, and this is the kids, right?
Yeah.
Kids tell their parents, I want a PS5 or I want an Xbox Series X.
Yeah.
And the parents are searching, and this is what it's going to be. They're going to be searching eBay. They're going to be hoping that it pops up on Amazon when they're looking at the right time. That Best Buy happens to get a shipment when they're nearby. That Target happens to get a shipment.
It's going
to
be the Wii all over again.
It is. Hopefully not so bad.
Or the Switch, for that matter. The Switch
right now is still in and out. Like, I get notifications on my phone from Wario64, and he's always posting when Switches come in and out of stock on Best Buy and Amazon especially, and it's really interesting to watch. Like, still.
It's still. I remember that at launch for the Nintendo Switch, it was really difficult to get your hands on a Switch.
Unless you had six of them pre-ordered and put them in the...
And your family.
Named me. Yes. So, there's also the fact that you, even if your item is going to be in tight supply, you want to be part of those mainstream buying guides because that's going to carry into next year. Like, people are going to remember that.
Absolutely.
You want to be present on all of those morning shows, on the Today Show, on Good Morning America. Like, you want those spots. You want those late night. And yes, those are paid promotions, but that's the right time of year.
And it is the right time of year. And especially for non-core mainstream audiences, you know, they're not going to be sitting there waiting to press pre-order when it first comes up, because these are not necessarily early adopters for their own sakes. These are early adopters for their kids' sakes, for their grandkids' sakes, you know, for their nieces or their nephews. So, yeah, this is going to be a really, really challenging launch because supply is going to be, it's not artificially constricted either, because the Wii, I felt like, was somewhat artificially constricted.
I think they underestimated.
Well, that's probably part of it because everyone and their dog's uncle purchased a Wii.
And there are reports that Sony is supposedly looking to amp up its production so that it has more in the chain for the holiday season.
And hopefully that ends up being the case so that no one ends up feeling left out or is left out during the holiday season. Mm-hmm. So we'll just have to keep our eyes on it.
Yeah. All right, so we touched on Uplay Plus. I honestly, the fact that it wasn't present in their press release and the fact that they had to be asked about it and it wasn't mentioned at all, they can say that it did well under quarantine. That price point isn't right when you put that price point up against something like Game Pass. I think that whole program is going to need to be retooled. I think Game Pass has rewritten the discussion on subscription programs.
I would tend to agree. And I know that, you know, EA is still doing its best with EA Access and EA Access Premier.
Yep. And they're bringing that to Steam at some point.
Yes, they are. So they're starting to branch out again, which is really important for their player base, but also to reintroduce people to those subscription services in places other than just, you know, Origin, EA Origin. So yeah, it's kind of distressing that it wasn't mentioned at all. They're like, no, it was good. Are you sure? Yeah. How sure are you? Considering everything else that's been going on at Ubisoft, are you sure?
Yeah, they gave no subscriber numbers or anything like that. And
they won't.
So we talked about Skull and Bones. We touched on Gods and Monsters, which was also absent from Ubisoft Forward, and they haven't talked about it. Also, Beyond Good and Evil 2, where?
Probably never, ever at this point. Like, yeah. I know it's been 2 years since we've had any update. We had no update last year. Yep. We had no update this year. I'm sure that it's dead in the water again, which is really unfortunate. I know that it's an ambitious project, and I know that the people that are running the project, they definitely, you know, they want to build the best game that they can. I mean, devs on any project want to build the best game that they can to a certain extent, but this is going to be a chunky tech game. Yeah.
They couldn't get their vision running on current gen hardware.
It could very well be. So it maybe they're going to be doing what we now hear Roller Champions is going to be doing, which is being refactored.
Yes.
Based on closed alpha feedback.
Which is a fancy way of saying people didn't like it the way we hoped they were going to like it, so we need to fix some stuff.
It looked super cute. I am really excited for, you know, roller derby nonsense, but if that gameplay loop isn't as satisfying as it appears to be, there's no way that that has long-term stickiness.
On top of it, it's like there's only so much you can do. Now, granted, if you don't have a content plan, there's a problem. Now, if you look at League of Legends, let's take League of Legends, which has one popular map, Summoner's Rift, right?
Sure.
The way that they add content to that is by adding new heroes. So you're not changing the landscape. Right. You're adding new player characters.
But you could do that even with the landscape. You could make different kinds of roller derby. Like, this is a video game we're talking about here. You do not need to be a roller derby simulation in order for it to be fun.
Right.
Right? You can make it completely bananas, like NBA Jam, but on roller skates.
Exactly. But the question is, what do you differentiate to keep people hooked? Is it... You know, are there different, do the teams play differently, for instance?
Or it could be any number of things. It could be power-ups, it could be items, it could be skins, it could be any number of things. But we don't know because it apparently did not go over very well, which is too bad. But I'll keep my fingers crossed because that game looks hecking cute.
Yeah, it does. And I hope that it ends up turning out well because it looks neat.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing on the numbers side I dropped in here, Ubisoft is really good about this. They actually report their territory breakdown when it comes to net bookings and their platform breakdown. So you can see what happened from year to year. Not a whole lot of shift.
Nope.
North America was a bigger part of the mix. Yes. Europe was about the same. The rest of the world dropped a little bit.
Just a bit.
About 5% in terms of the mix. So 32% of their net bookings came from Europe, 52% came from North America, and 16% came from the rest of the world this quarter. So that's a 6% increase for North America, a 5% decrease for the rest of the world, and a 1% decrease for Europe. So,
right. But the really interesting thing here is the breakdown by platforms.
Yeah, this is always fascinating to me. When Wii U used to be on this list, it was like the tragic part of every Ubisoft. Because it was like Wii U was like 1%.
Oh, poor Wii U. It was a lame duck. It tried its best, but it was just not a good console.
Yeah, no one knew what it was. This is really interesting, the platform breakdown.
Yeah, this platform breakdown is really interesting. So the differences between Q1 2019 to 2020 versus Q1 2020 to 2021. I mean, for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, there isn't too much of a difference there. There's a 3% difference year over year for PlayStation 4. There's a 1% difference on Xbox One. The significant change on here starts with PC. So last year, PC took a 34% chunk of the platforms, making it the king of the castle.
Yeah, it was the top platform.
It was the top platform. Yeah, exactly. So last year, it was sitting at 34%. This year, it's sitting at 20%.
Yeah.
So that's fascinating to me. Do you think that that has anything to do with where they're launching their games?
I think that might be part of it, but I also think this is another knock-on effect related to the quarantine.
How so?
So because you have everybody who's home under quarantine, I think your core players mm-hmm. are still playing in the same place.
Yes.
But I think what's likely happening is you have more players.
Oh, I see what you're going for
here. So the people who aren't in the core are more likely to drift towards console because yes. they don't have a gaming-ready PC rig. And they are likely looking at the Switch because the Switch has been such a hot item during mm-hmm. quarantine. Now, remember, if you take a look at this, it went from 5% to 11% of the mix.
That's doubling, more than doubling.
Exactly. And then mobile went up because everybody's got a mobile phone in their hand from 7% to 12%.
Exactly.
So you've got people who didn't necessarily have the time to game suddenly who are at home. They don't have commute times at the very least.
So what are they going to do?
They're picking up a controller.
Well, why not?
So remember, the pie grew significantly.
Yes, the pie did grow.
So when you look at the numbers, even though it went from 31% to 34% for PlayStation 4, what that translates to
is pie bigger.
Yeah. That slice is like not 3% bigger. Like right. It's, again, this is a percentage of the total net bookings, which we already said, I'm going to scroll back up. Total net bookings went up 30.5%. So the pie is about a third larger.
So it's understandable that we're seeing bigger numbers in some places than others. I'm really glad that you were able to explain what was going on between PC last year, between PC this and PC this year. Mm-hmm. But I think you're absolutely right. I think that because the pie is bigger and we're looking at non-core audiences, core folks are just going to play where they play. Yeah. So that's really interesting.
I think we'll see in a year, assuming in a year things are back to normal, I think we're going to see that mix start to shift back to where it was in Q1 of 2019,
and we will have two more consoles on there.
We will, at that absolutely. Point.
So those percentages are going to get a little bit strange.
But even the console versus PC comparison.
No, I hear you. Absolutely. What else happened during the call?
So we saved this, and you know, we'll note this here. We're at 33 minutes or so. Put the content warning in here because we are going to be talking about Ubisoft's culture of assault and abuse
and harassment
and harassment and how that was addressed in the call. The call actually opened up. CEO Yves Guillemot opened up with a lengthy statement and said that Ubisoft has a 5-point plan to deal with its massive issues. First point was they're doing, as we've talked about, they've contracted external consultants
yep.
to handle investigations of employees who have been accused.
Yep.
They also have an externally managed listening platform so that people can submit complaints and tips anonymously. Reports from these consultants are provided to the board of directors. And to date, and I want to talk about this, a number of people have stepped down, left the company, been suspended, or were terminated. And if you look at who has stepped down and left the company versus the people that we know who have been terminated, the higher up you go, the more likely it is that Ubisoft is going to say, okay, you can step down or you can voluntarily leave the company. But the lower employees are the ones who are getting suspended and terminated.
Yeah.
Because they are not as visible. And I think, you know, if you look at the people, and these were a number of people at the top.
A lot.
Like, this is not a small number. This is a huge percentage, and including the person who was responsible for driving the creative on Ubisoft's entire portfolio.
Like, just thinking about it, just honestly, it makes my stomach turn.
Ubisoft, yes, me too. And Ubisoft has established a support and recovery unit, a quote support and recovery unit, to aid victims.
So we'll have to, honestly, I think you know, I appreciate the sentiment there. And also part of me wants to be like, okay, well, that's great. But also, what are you doing to help them recover their careers?
Yeah.
What are you helping them to do to regain lost years where they could have been at the top of their careers, the top of their game? But because their voices were squashed for so long, this isn't just about psychological damage.
Yeah.
This is about serious damage that was done to their careers over the years.
Yeah. And I don't, there's nothing, I don't think there's anything they can do to recover that without hiring people back and giving them jobs.
But why would they?
I don't know.
And why would they want to come back? A lot of those folks have moved on to other studios. They've founded their own studios, mm-hmm. and they're making incredible games all by themselves. They don't need Ubisoft to give them anything. But that is what I think about. It's like, there's no way that you can help the folks that are on the inside recover from the damage that was done either implicitly or explicitly. And that makes me just so, so upset.
Likewise.
All right. So what else have we got here? There is a review and reorganization of the editorial unit with an overhaul, currently underway.
And this is that powerful editorial group that was responsible for directing the content across Ubisoft's portfolio.
That's right. So across all of its major IPs, including Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed and Ghost Recon and Rainbow Six and everything like that.
And the reason, and I've seen people talk about this, you know, and obviously prior to all of this, a number of critics have said, like, Ubisoft's games largely all feel the same. You know, you have towers that open up pieces of the map. There's icons all over the map. And why do Ubisoft's games all feel kind of the same? It's because they were being driven by this one editorial unit with very powerful people who were greenlighting and shutting down projects at, you know, based on their personal preferences. Ubisoft has said they are continuing to transform their HR processes, quote, in order to better prevent, detect, and sanction inappropriate behavior. There's an external HR audit that has been commissioned, and now a portion of team leads' bonuses are tied to their ability to, quote, create a positive and inclusive workplace environment. I don't know how you measure that. I don't know what the KPIs are on that.
And, you know, that's what worries me. It worries me that this is going to end up being another tool for abuse. This worries me that this is going to be you're a dissenting voice on this team, and therefore, you know, like, I can't have you on this team because my bonus is tied to this team's, you know, inclusivity and to being positive. You're not being positive. You're being a dissenting voice, and you're telling us that this is racist, or you're telling us this is misogynist or transphobic or homophobic or whatever. And I'm really scared that that's going to end up being used as another way to silence Black, Indigenous, and people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me afraid. It does. And women as well. So, and gender minorities, of course. But, you know, that really does worry me.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see how that goes. But
they're also going to be doing harassment awareness education in the form of trainings.
And I mean, those things have been standard. Those are mm-hmm. standard in corporate culture, literally in all industries. It's shocking
to me. We haven't even gotten to the one that's going to make your head spin yet.
Okay, hold on.
That's the last one.
Oh, I see.
They're going to be conducting group-wide questionnaires and listening sessions at all Ubisoft sites to gather feedback anonymously. Again, this is reactive.
All of this is reactive, and this is all stuff that could have been put firmly in place anywhere between 5 and 10 years ago.
Yep.
When diversity and inclusion was not just a, oh, maybe we should do this, and it turned into a, this is definitely an important piece of the work that we're doing, because we say that our games are made by a diverse set of developers that come from a diverse set of backgrounds and have been saying this since the beginning of Assassin's Creed.
All right, do it. Read the last one.
I don't wanna.
Do you want me to?
No, I'm gonna do it.
Okay.
In this year of our Lord, and by Lord, I mean this year of our Lord Cupcake or something. I don't know. I'm not religious. Cupcake. All hail the cupcake. In this year of 2020, there is a new staff. Two new staff positions. Two new staff positions. And I'm having a hard time with this because this hurts. Because they should have been here the whole time. There will be a head of workplace culture, mm-hmm. which is interesting to me. I think that can be something that's really interesting, and that could be something that will help folks feel safer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever heard of a head of workplace culture before, but this one I have heard of. A head of diversity and inclusion is a brand new position in 2020
at Ubisoft, a company that says that all of its games were made by a diverse group of creators, blah, blah, blah. It's really like every time I see that now, I'm just going to laugh because it seems like such pandering nonsense.
It's head desk all over. And it's just like, I want to bang my head against my desk until I can't stand again. Apparently, both of these positions are open to internal and external candidates, and both of these positions will directly report to CEO Yves Guillemot. Right. So
this is how the call started. It was this big, like, here's all the ways that we're handling this. And then as if to say, but wait, we're actually okay on diversity. CFO Frederic Degay?
I don't know. I'd just go with it. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
Read a laundry list of Ubisoft game characters that were not white men.
Cool. That's definitely not weird.
It felt super forced and super weird.
And super gross.
Well, it felt like, no, really, I have a black friend.
Ooh, no, I hate it.
Yeah. Nope. And it was just...
Nope.
It was really weird. During the call, Yves Guillemot said he was not considering stepping down. I think this is another important place to remind that Ubisoft's largest investor or largest share owner. Wow. Whew, words today. Is the Guillemot family.
Yes. So it's not just Yves, it's his whole family.
So it's not like if this happened at EA.
Sure.
Or Take Two.
Mm-hmm.
You would likely see the CEOs out on their keisters.
Well, you would certainly see Andrew out on his keister.
Yeah.
I don't think that Andrew... Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, if we want to use EA specifically, if this had happened at EA, if EA was under
fire... Andrew would have left.
Yeah.
Andrew would have left because he would have left deeply shamed.
Yep.
And he is the kind of person where he would have taken personal responsibility for it, and it would have crushed him
mm-hmm.
into a billion pieces. And I don't think that he would have been like, I am clearly not fit for this job. I clearly cannot do this job.
And hold that thought, because we're going to get to the analyst questions. Now, some of them were cringy, and there was one question that I wanted to like wanted to like give a round of applause to.
All right. Well, I guess we're gonna do that. So there were apparently there were some analyst focus on the impact of the quote allegations
yep.
on work process.
Yep.
Asking if it caused a quote distraction.
Yeah, that word when I don't and I don't remember what analyst it
how,
was.
How loudly did you groan?
I groaned on Twitter. Like that was one I was not gonna hold back on, because to call this a distraction is the most tone-deaf nonsense. I get it. You're an analyst. You're responsible for, you know, you're responsible for managing your investors, your clients' investment funds. You're responsible for...
But business is people.
Sure.
Business is people. And at the end of the day, business is not just money. Business is people.
Absolutely. So that was cringy as hell.
That was extremely yikes.
But there was one analyst.
Oh, this one's a good one.
I really appreciated this, who pretty much laid out like, all right, here's the reality of the situation. You, Yves Guillemot, the CEO of this organization, there are three possibilities here. One, you didn't know any of this was going on.
Which means
you're stupid.
Means you'd been duped.
Yeah, and that's not a great quality in a leader.
No.
Two, you knew and you didn't do anything.
Very bad.
Yes. Three, you knew and you dragged your feet on dealing with it. Potentially for years.
I have a feeling that it was number three.
Yeah.
I have a feeling, because you don't have that many problems and not know about it. Can you imagine being at the tippy top and not knowing anything?
I think that
it was probably cushioned.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was probably spun, and I think that it was pulled, everything was pulled in places where it looked to be a lot better than it was. And so I understand with the whole, like, well, okay, so this seems like it's a problem, but, like, what? How do I, what? Because no one's telling the truth.
So here's the statement.
So this statement's really interesting. So this is Eve's, this Eve's response? Yeah. So this is Gimo's response. So, quote, each time we have been made aware of misconduct, we made actually tough decisions and made sure that those decisions had clear and positive impact. So that's very important. It's now become clear that certain individuals betrayed the trust I placed in them, so just like I said, and didn't live up to Ubisoft's shared values. So I have never compromised on my core values and ethics, and never will. I will continue to run and transform Ubisoft to face today's and tomorrow's challenges. So it was three. Yeah. He knew he didn't move fast enough, or he knew and people were like, he knew pieces of it, but he didn't ever have the full picture.
There was some form of plausible deniability in there, which isn't plausible.
But it's not plausible, because what this ends up turning into is it ends up becoming a, okay, but you are ultimately responsible for all of this. The buck literally stops with Gimo. Mm-hmm. It has to. That's your job as CEO. If you are responsible for steering the entirety of 18,000 people's careers, you need to be responsible for how they're treated.
And I would go so far as to say that in a situation where your family is not the largest shareholder, maybe you take these things more seriously and move a little faster because you don't feel as secure.
A little bit.
Let's see. He was also asked about how senior staff departures would impact creative. This was a separate question than the distraction question.
Well, I mean, at least there's that. So what was his response?
We have a deep bench of senior, talented, creative people, a lot of creative minds. So I'm now taking directly the role of CMO, which is Chief Marketing Officer. I think here he meant the CCO, the Chief Creative Officer, after Serge Haskaway.
I guess.
Stepped down, got the boot. Like, I don't know.
Well, that's the thing, is we don't really know who actually stepped down and who actually, you know, was like, you have two options. You can go of your own volition, or we can boot you out.
Yeah. And I'm really taking care of all those games that are on the way. I was already following those games carefully, and I have strong teams to follow the games that are created. We're going to take advantage of the evolution of the company to make sure more communication and investment from all local teams, into the production of the games. So essentially what also emerged was that the vision is already set for these games that are coming out in the near term, so that they can operate without some of this high level creative leadership because they're executing on a plan. The question then becomes, what happens for the games that are currently starting development right now, and how is Ubisoft's portfolio going to look different? The other question that was asked was, can you name the people who have taken on these roles? And there were no names given.
Because this is what it comes down to. This is performative transparency. Mm-hmm. They're not actually looking to be transparent about what they're doing to change corporate culture at Ubisoft. They just want people to stop asking questions.
It seems like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna say, based on a lot of patterns that I've seen, not just in this industry, but in tech everywhere, if you are not being as transparent as you could be, not as you should be, but as you could be. Because naming names after you've already removed people, or after you have already asked people to step up into these roles, what are you losing?
Yeah.
All right. So
that's Ubisoft.
So we're going to clap back in, sort of. I'd like, just imagine me doing like a clap.
Like a clapboard?
Like a clapboard. You can come back now. That was a lot.
Yeah.
All right. We should move on to something else.
Yes, let's talk about Microsoft.
I love talking about Microsoft. Microsoft's doing some really cool stuff. So Microsoft had their, this was their Q1?
This was Q1.
This is Q1 2020 to 2021.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is Q4 for them. Hold on.
Is it Q4 for them? Sure. This is the problem with doing financials. You never know who's doing what, when, or how.
This was Q4 for them.
Okay, so this
Q4
is
fiscal 20.
This is Q4 fiscal 20 for Microsoft. So we are going to, we'll go through some key stats, what's going on with them. It looks like they had another strong quarter, but Microsoft usually has strong quarters. Like, but this one looks like it just looks bananas.
What we expect at this point in a generation is hardware is going to dip, software is going to dip. Services are going to be okay. They're going to be level or maybe grow a little bit. They'll go down. But I think we're going to see services level off. But we expect hardware to take a sharp nosedive. We expect software to take a sharp nosedive at the end of a generation.
Absolutely. And that's been fairly steady, especially over the last two generations, especially. So, however, gaming revenue at Microsoft increased $1.3 billion, or 64%, which was driven by growth in Xbox content and services.
So this is games, Game Pass. Mm-hmm.
It's Game Pass. It was Game Pass.
It's Game Pass.
100%. It is the best value on the market, and we will keep banging that drum.
Yep, absolutely.
It is the future.
Xbox content and services revenue increased $1.2 billion, or 65%, primarily due to record engagement, including strength from third-party titles as stay-at-home guidelines continued. Absolutely. So again, we talked about big sales. We talked about a number of publishers offering good deals. So this was driving a lot of software purchases, and this was the perfect time to sign up for Game Pass.
It really was. But the thing that was really shocking,
yeah,
this was the shocking piece, is that Xbox hardware revenue increased 49%. At the end of a console generation.
It's pretty impressive.
It's nuts. And it's primarily due to an increase in volume of consoles sold. So folks are like, okay, I haven't picked up an Xbox in years. Yep. So like, Game Pass looks cool.
Yep.
So that's I don't even know how you measure attach rate for Game Pass versus Xbox consoles.
It's interesting.
We should take a look. We should do some math.
Now, and this is a great point to talk about this. So I noticed this headline pop up today. Aaron Greenberg was on What's Good Games, and he said, well, no, Game Pass isn't a huge like profit engine for us. We just want people engaged. And we have talked about this on this show a number of times. Of course, it's not a huge profit motivator for them right now because they're in the acquisition phase.
And as we have already discussed on a number of our episodes, user acquisition is extremely expensive.
And it's time consuming.
And it takes forever. So UA, knowing very much that this is an expensive endeavor that takes forever, yeah, of course they're not going to make any money right now with Xbox Game Pass. That's not the point. The point right now is to get people in the door with their $1 for the first month to start and to get them interested and get them hooked on Game Pass Ultimate, which is going to have Xbox Live and it's going to have xCloud and it's going to be usable on PC as well as your console. And your phone, for crying out loud.
They are positioning Game Pass as Microsoft's gateway to next generation, especially with the Xbox
ecosystem. We talked about this in our last news episode, philosophical differences and the differences between how PlayStation is handling next gen versus how Xbox is handling next gen. And it all comes down to what you personally value as a consumer. So for me, I very much so value the inclusivity and the ecosystem where it's like, okay, well, I can take my games with me. That's great. I'm going to play exclusives. I'm still going to play the exclusives on PlayStation, but I am probably going to play a lot of third-party non-exclusives on my Xbox because this is an approach that very much so aligns with my personal values. And as a millennial, I have been voting with my wallet for many years.
Mm-hmm. So I threw in some stats from Microsoft's
Microsoft had a strong quarter.
Their revenue was up 13%. Now, just to give you a comparison again, the whole company's revenue was up 13%.
Yes.
But gaming's revenue was up 64%. So they outperformed.
They did. Absolutely. And so remember that revenue for Microsoft isn't just about gaming. It's also about their operating systems. It's about Microsoft Azure. Server. It's about Azure, SharePoint, Teams. Mm-hmm. Microsoft Office 365, they have a lot of different things that they're up to right now. So it's important to keep that into perspective. Microsoft is enormous.
So I don't think there's really a need to hit on the rest of the full company earnings, but let's talk a little bit about some of the takeaways that we had from the Xbox Series X first party / exclusive / Game Pass presentation that happened last week.
Man, that was a lot of fun, though.
It was a lot of fun.
Like, I honestly really enjoyed that presentation. I didn't care for their third-party presentations. I was like, oh, this is weird and cool, I guess, but I'm not super into it. But we got to see a lot of really interesting-looking games, including 343's very, very much so hotly anticipated Halo Infinite.
Yep. Rare's new game, Everwild.
Put it in my veins. A druid game? Yeah. I want it.
And then going right into Obsidian's... I mean, I don't have the order right here. For
no, it's fine.
But Obsidian doing what looks like an Elder Scrolls-style game.
Elder Scrolls mixed with, like, Bioshock? It kind of looks like...
Well, I mean, I just think about Skyrim, how I usually have, like, my left hand is a flamey hand and my right hand is my sword hand.
Okay, that's fair enough. So, I didn't play a lot of Skyrim. But, I miss Morrowind.
But given Obsidian's experience in doing a Fallout-style game in Outer Worlds...
Which was exceptional. It was so good.
Like, this doesn't surprise me that they are taking all of the things that they learn, that they know from working on that style of open-world game from New Vegas and from...
And it's important to note that Obsidian is also behind Pillars of Eternity.
Mm-hmm.
So Pillars of Eternity is very much so a classic role-playing game. Avowed looks like it is taking a page out of Elder Scrolls and Pillars of Eternity.
Cool.
That's kind of what it looked like to me. But the real star of the Obsidian lineup
is Grounded. Which is available today, or I guess yesterday if you're listening to this when we air tomorrow. It's on Game Pass. It's out now. It's on preview on Game Pass.
Yes, it is.
In fact, you're going to hear that Game Pass thing echoed over and over again. Every game that was available or they showed in this presentation will be available through Game Pass.
In some way.
And we'll talk about that.
Yes, we'll absolutely get there. We also saw the new Forza Motorsport,
mm-hmm.
which looked, I mean, it's Forza, so it looks great. But really, I just want more Forza Horizons.
But
Playground is not working on Forza Horizon.
Or at least not just working on Forza Horizon.
Clearly not, because we got to end the show with a sneaky peek. And it was a cheeky sneaky peek at Fable.
Yep. I'm excited. Like,
I love the Fable games.
We'll see how they do with it. Now, this is a new studio. Lionhead doesn't exist anymore. Microsoft closed them down a number of years ago.
Yeah. So, well, they were also bleeding money from what I understand. Yeah. So what else do we got? We've got State of Decay 3.
With Zombie Deer?
That looked really cool.
It does.
That looked awesome.
I haven't played State of Decay 2, but I did play all of the first State of Decay late.
I know.
I played it very late. I really, really liked it.
The last two on here are two games that I am hotly anticipating. Psychonauts 2. I played the absolute heck out of the first Psychonauts game way, way, way back. On the PlayStation 2, and James played on the original Xbox.
I played on the original Xbox also.
And Tell Me Why is the other one here. This is a published by Xbox Game Studios, but the development is done by Don't Nod, the folks behind Vampyr and Life is Strange, mm-hmm. and what else have they done? Those are the biggies.
Did they do Remember Me?
They did do Remember Me. I believe that that's the case. Tell Me Why looks awesome. I'm really excited. My good friend Morgan Lockhart worked on it, and she's an amazing narrative designer, so I am psyched. That game looks great, and it comes out very soon. What else did we see?
In fact, I think, was it three episodes that started at the end of August, go into September or something
yes.
like that? Okay. So there were a number of third-party announcements. Now, again, the strength of these announcements isn't their exclusivity. It's their connection to Game Pass. And
yes.
led off with Dragon Quest XI S, which was only released on the Switch. So that was the Switch version that had more content and had some cool throwback, nods to the older Dragon Quest games. That game is coming to... Xbox consoles, it's coming to PlayStation 4 and it's coming to Steam. It will be part of Game Pass on both Xbox and PC.
Speaking of some Eastern games that are making it on a Western kind of platform, mm-hmm. because Xbox traditionally, now correct me if I'm wrong, but traditionally Xbox doesn't really have much of a foothold in Japan.
No, that's where they've struggled.
Yeah. So seeing some of these games from Japan and mm-hmm. from Square Enix East coming over to Xbox Game Pass perhaps could mean that Microsoft is going to have a greater foothold in Japan. That could be really cool. So anyway, so Balan Wonderworld. So these are the folks that brought us Sonic Knights.
No, Sonic Games, the creator of Sonic.
That's right.
And the creator of Knights into Dreams.
Okay, there we go. We did it. And by we, I mean you did it. This game looks bonkers.
It does.
It looks so cute.
Now, this game was also, this was part of the pre-show, part of Jeff Keighley's pre-show.
This was.
So part. I don't believe this is a Game Pass game.
No, I don't think so either, but still pretty cool.
Yeah.
Another one on there. Oh, this one looked amazing. Echo Generation. It gave me some serious voxel Stranger Things vibes.
Yeah, that looked really good. That's by Coco Cucumber.
Coco Cucumber, yeah.
We I saw think they're briefly, Canadian dev. So I read more about this Exo Mecha game. This was also on Jeff's pre-show. It's mm-hmm. by a studio called Twisted Red. It's a mech battle royale.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's free to play.
Oh, that's neat. What else have we got on here? Oh, we've got Hello Neighbor 2. Oh my yep. goodness, that trailer was just woo.
It was. Also, I'm stealing this from our quick hits from next show, so we'll put it in this show. Tiny Build actually just purchased the team behind Hello Neighbor from Dynamic Beasts, which is the studio that made it. So they just purchased that team though.
Okay.
And they rebranded under the Eerie Guest name. The amount of the purchase was not disclosed, but at the same time, Tiny Build made a $15 million investment in the franchise.
That's really cool. Speaking of some excellent teams that are doing some excellent work, Bloober Team is bringing us some bonkers looking next level horror.
And that was really cool because it seems like it's simultaneously rendering the real world and the astral plane.
It gives me some Silent Hill 3 vibes in a big way. That looks really interesting. So that game is called The Medium.
Yep. The team at Thunderful, which is a combination of Image and Form.
Yep.
And Zoink.
Yes.
And Image and Form is behind the SteamWorld
yes,
series.
Correct.
Zoink, Stick It to the Man, is one of the funniest, quirkiest, it's like a point and click, side scrolling, platformy adventure game. It's so good.
It's totally bananas.
I have not played Flipping Death, which was their one that came after that.
It's worth noting that Zoink is also working with EA Originals.
Yes, they are. And they did Fee, right?
Yes, they did Fee.
Yep, and they have another
or
game.
Fae.
Fae?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That one's coming. They're doing a game called The Gunk, which is this cute, like,
it's
the
cute.
Art style is very Image and Form, and Zoink for that matter, and you have to, like, you land on this planet, and then there's all this gunk that is essentially preventing the planet from being verdant and green, and you have to suck up all the gunk into your space vacuum. It's like Luigi's Mansion in space, I guess.
Oh, I'm into that. That's a back of the box quote right there.
Yeah.
I like that.
If I'm at all right on how it plays, we'll see.
But it looks cool.
Here's one where the lead was buried.
Yeah, I wasn't really understanding this at all. Apparently, Phantasy Star Online 2.
New Genesis
is a new game?
It's a separate game. So apparently it takes place 1,000 years after Phantasy Star Online 2. Your characters can move over. Some of your stuff can move over, but it's effectively a different game. So you can go back and you can still play Phantasy Star Online. But
so is this a Destiny situation?
It may be.
Kind of sounds like a Destiny situation.
The situation here, though, is Phantasy Star Online 2 came to the West so late that this is actually a really good call because it's going to look like a contemporary game as opposed to what Phantasy Star Online 2 looks like. What else
no
we
shade.
Have?
Looks like... Okay, but I want to talk about the 40K one.
You can talk about the next two.
Okay. So, we are also going to see a new Stalker game?
Yeah, that was really interesting.
That one is really interesting. And I don't really understand it, I guess. Is it not being done by 4A?
That's not 4A that did Stalker.
It was
DSC Game World that did it.
Okay.
You're thinking Metro.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of, yeah. But I could have... No, they have people from the Stalker team.
Oh,
that's at 4A.
Okay. Which
that's
makes
why,
sense.
That's
yeah,
why
yeah,
I was
yeah.
messing it up. Because I was like, what? Then why did I talk about Stalker 2 years ago in an interview that I did with... Oh, because it's the team that did the original Stalker. Okay, so anyway, new Stalker game. Don't know anything about it other than there's a new Stalker game. But this one is the money. I was so convinced that this was going to be a Necromunda game. So, Fat Shark, these are the devs behind Warhammer Fantasy's Vermintide and Vermintide 2. Mm-hmm. Both of these games are so good. They are so good in very different ways. We play Vermintide 2 with my brother.
Yep.
And our partner. So it is, yeah. So anyway, I was really excited. I was like, Fat Shark? What's Fat Shark doing? Are we going to see a Necromunda game? Because I'm really into Necromunda.
Well, there is a Necromunda game coming.
Well, I already know that. But I thought that this was going to be like
eventually.
A Vermintide
oh,
kind of
it.
Necromunda game. Because I love that world.
Mm-hmm.
But this is actually like a pure Warhammer 40K experience where you are taking down chaos. It looks like you're taking down Slaanesh and Nurgle, actually. I didn't see any Chaos Marines in there. Or any, like, any Cornate Chaos in there, anyway. So this is Warhammer 40K Darktide. So it is going to be a Vermintide style of game where it's going to be you go out into the world and you just like slaughter everything. But the really cool thing is that you're playing as Imperial Guard. That's neat.
Yeah.
You never get to play as Imperial Guard. You're always playing as like Blood Ravens and Terminators and Dark Angels and whatever, but you never get to play as Imps. Imperial Guard are actually really interesting. I think this could be a really cool game. I was kind of hoping it was going to be Necromunda. Anyway, I'm done nerding out now. That's okay. I really like 40K.
I think what's really interesting about this, Fat Shark has done really, really well for themselves with Vermintide.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're really cool people at Fat Shark. I've had a couple of really great conversations with them over the years and just great people working there.
And if you've never played Vermintide, if you have no idea what it is we're talking about, it's essentially Left 4 Dead, but you're killing rats and chaos beasts and demons and stuff.
It's awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
It's awesome.
It's very bloody. But it is, if you like Left 4 Dead style games,
it's best in class. Genuinely.
It's so much fun.
It's best in class. And the ways in which they improve the game, Vermintide, you know, original and Vermintide 2. Vermintide 2 has a better progression system, it has better cosmetics, it has better internal transactions, because the first game was just kind of like, how did you support this game?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even understand. And a lot of paid, it was through
paid DLC. A lot of paid DLC, yeah.
It was through paid DLC, but they actually have microtransactions built into the game for cosmetics, which I think is a really smart business model for them, because, you know, they want to keep the costs down, so that's a way to do it. Anyway, Darktide looks great, and I want it in my veins.
It does. The other thing, the next two, and this is where we got into a little bit of confusion about Game Pass.
Yes.
The first is, I'm a huge Remedy fan. I am an unabashed Remedy fan, have been for years and years and years. I have known, I talked to Thomas Puha, who is, I don't remember what his title is right now, but he's at Remedy.
He's comms, I believe.
He's comms. I think maybe he's even progressed beyond that. Might be doing biz dev now. But he and I spoke most recently, you know, in a journalistic capacity when I was at Gamescom in 2016, and I knew they were working on a single-player campaign for Crossfire.
Yes.
So Crossfire is, the original was by Smilegate, and is by Smilegate, huge in Asia. If you looked at when Call of Duty Online came out and it was being released into the Chinese market, Activision did this huge presentation, which was like, this is Call of Duty Online, and this is all the ways we're doing to make it appropriate for the Chinese market and win players, and here's our key competition. And they showed Crossfire, and that game looked old and janky. It looked like a PS1 game.
Oh boy. Yeah. And Crossfire did not look like it was going to be fun. It was a rough multiplayer experience.
So Crossfire 2 is much different. It has contemporary visuals, but there is a campaign coming, and this whole thing is coming to the West now. So yes, what's going to happen is,
which we determined, and that was something that was announced in 2018, I believe, as alongside Control.
Okay, yeah.
So they officially announced it, because I had a conversation with the game director. I believe it was the game director. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what his name is, unfortunately, because it was like 2 years ago. My brain is made of Swiss cheese now. But we had a conversation about the way that Remedy is structuring its internal studios. They have a team that's dedicated to research and development. They had a team that was dedicated to the Crossfire campaign, and they had a team that is dedicated to Control.
Yep. So the way this is going to work, I believe Crossfire, like the multiplayer, I don't know if that's free to play or but it is included in Game Pass. Something is included in Game Pass, but not the campaign.
The campaign is not included.
The campaign is part of a premium battle pass that'll be available at launch. So you will have to pay for the campaign. It will not be part of Game Pass.
That'll still be okay.
Sure. Absolutely. I have in my notes here that the multiplayer is free to play. The other thing that was shown, Outer Worlds is getting some DLC, more Obsidian.
Yes.
The core game is part of Game Pass. The DLC is not. You'll be able to get your Game Pass discount, which I think is 10%. But no, the DLC won't be included in Game Pass. So those in Game Pass. So those are the two things that were kind of like, all right, this has a little bit of confusing messaging. So got that cleared up. Microsoft also announced that they additional games that are being optimized for Xbox Series X.
Absolutely. So the games that we are going to be seeing optimized for Xbox Series X will be Gears 5. I'm sure that'll look absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Gears Tactics, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which, wow. They actually talked about that, and they showed some differences between Xbox One versus Xbox Series X, and it's just, like, it is phenomenal, the frame rate differences. And I know that when Ori launched originally, there were a lot of problems around that specifically.
Yeah.
Because there was so much lag in input versus what you're seeing on the screen, and that ended up making the game unplayable for some folks. Mm-hmm. Forza Horizon 4, yes, I'm very excited about that. I love me some Forza Horizon. And Sea of Thieves.
Which is going to be a lot of fun, I think, on Xbox Series X.
I mean, I'm all for it.
I mean, it's fun now.
I like Sea of Thieves. We're playing it on PC with my brother. Yes. So, what are some of our takeaways, Mike?
Given that their entire presentation was structured around Game Pass, we continued to, and I said this publicly, I'm not afraid to say this, Game Pass is the best value in gaming right now.
Absolutely, hands down.
So I think that that is going to be a central pillar. I think that we are going to see some shifts in the way that Microsoft handles its online component, Xbox Live. I think that
just as we talked about during our philosophical differences news
show. Episode 33, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then there was one other thing that jumped out, and I'm waiting to get, we don't have a full clarification on this yet. So Microsoft has been pretty vocal about the fact that all of the games that are going to be first party games playable on Xbox Series X will not be exclusive to Xbox Series X.
Correct.
For the first couple of years. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they will be playable on Xbox One. It could just mean that they will also be playable on PC.
We're not sure.
We're not sure yet, because the Xbox One logos that were originally on the Everwild and Avowed pages seem to have been removed. Now, it could just be that they won't be ready at launch, or these games are, in fact, too ambitious to run on the Xbox One hardware.
And whatever that ends up being, you know, we'll just have to... we'll keep an eye on it and let you all know when we know.
Ultimately, it was a good show, though.
It was. I thought that they really brought some fire. I know that there's been some controversy around what Halo Infinite looks like versus, like, what Sony's been bringing to the table with things like The Last of Us Part 2. Listen, Halo has never been about hyperrealism, and I'm not a Halo nerd by any stretch of the imagination, but it's always been cartoony. Like, from my perspective, it's always been kind of cartoony. It's just stylized.
Mm-hmm.
But we will have to wait for 343 to weigh in on this and let us know what's going on. I'm sure that they will have some developer commentary that will come into this, and we'll see some interviews coming out on the big sites leading up to launch.
Yeah. I mean, from the perspective of how it changes the Halo franchise, I think there's a lot to be said for an open world game. I think that there are ways to iterate on Halo as an open world sandbox game with enemy levels, mm-hmm. right? If you think about what Assassin's Creed Origins and Odyssey did for that series.
Absolutely.
If I look at how I'm playing Fallout 76, for instance, if you look at how people play Destiny, where you've got content that grows
absolutely.
With the player, and if this is a sure, there's going to be a story, but if there ends up being like a long-term pitched battle for control of that Halo ring that we saw
mm-hmm.
in the trailer, we're looking at ways to monetize content and keep players engaged in similar ways to the way Destiny does.
But it's not just about keeping players engaged. It's about making sure that the developers still have jobs.
Yes, absolutely.
And I mean, we definitely talk about this from a, yes, we love video games and video games are awesome and more video games, please. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we know that our audience is mostly comprised of industry folks. So we recognize that the reason why games as a service and live service games are necessary in this economy is because it ensures the stability of both the product and for the team.
And as people who covered the old way of games as a product, where you would have games go gold and then potentially large portions of teams laid off before the game was even released. This was common.
This was something that happened all the time, and it was heartbreaking because, you know, Mike and I are, you know, we talk to developers all the time about, like, look, it's not just about having a game that you want to release. It's about having a plan for your studio long term. I've had a number of conversations over the years with studios that all they have is a game.
Mm-hmm.
They're just looking to release the game. And it's like, okay, but what are you doing beyond this? What are you doing to ensure the stability of your studio? And ultimately, if this is the way that AAA can keep their studios up and going and moving through a quiet phase of next content, of like whatever they're working on next, mm-hmm. I can't help but support that. I want to see developers to continue to do the work that they're good at and continue to deliver content and experiences that we love.
And I think that's a great place to wrap up.
And this has been episode 34.
We did it.
We did. So thank you for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. This has been episode 34. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I'm at Amanda Farrow.
And I'm at Footerish, FutterIsH.
Every time.
You can also subscribe to our RSS feed. If this is your first time here, welcome.
Welcome.
You can find that at virtualeconomy.libsyn. That's libsyn.com/RSS. You can also listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Podcast Addict.
Pocket Sand.
Oh, no, there's another podcast, which is, I'm sure, a real service. please do subscribe if you like what you heard. And if possible, review the show. Subscribing, reviewing, let people know, let the algorithms know that we're worth paying attention to. So thank you. And if you have questions for us, we'd love getting listener questions. You can DM us at Virtual Econcast on Twitter or send us an email at podcast@fsquared.biz.
Speaking of F Squared, Virtual Economy is an F Squared initiative. And along with pro bono business consulting for up and coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz.
And we will be back later this week for our regularly scheduled news show. And in the meantime, wash your hands, stay hydrated, be good to them.
We'll see you soon.